wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatec.
No, you're working at Inatec because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Giants. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 1975, Dow up 210. We got NASDAQ up 58. So we're celebrating allegedly a tentative border deal. With Congress leaving shutdown up to Trump. So we'll see how that works. Brennan, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing fine this morning, Chief. How are you?
I'm doing all right. You were right to call in instead of the ice. You know what? If we were two degrees away from of total disaster outside, it's actually kind of slushy.
It was nasty out there, but not nearly as bad as it could have been.
I'm going to say your top steps, though, Matty, probably would have been frozen. Because the downstairs ones were.
Yeah, I would agree.
So I picked Manny up around front.
We were warned about the conditions out there and said probably not a good idea. So if we could call him, we couldn't. So glad we were able to work this out.
But you're no longer the big shot lawyer at work. You don't have to wear your floor shimes. You could wear like regular, you know, L.L. Beans and still have slushed in.
Well, that's true. I could have done that. I could have walked in, but.
or just
go on skeeching. Just go over to LaSalle and skeech a ride on the back of the cars as they're going down the
street. There you go.
You never doing that as a kid?
Oh, well, a little bit. I never was much of that because I was always worried what happened if the guy stopped.
Well, then you just slide off.
Yeah, well, let's see.
Dad, did you do that as a kid?
No, definitely not.
Do you know what we're talking about?
Yes.
If it was really, really snowy, you could pull it off. But if it's the... Hey, a couple of interesting items today. I mean, one of them I sort of mentioned is with all this news coming out of Washington and the market's flying up and down based on it, how much of it is people celebrating the deal and how much of it is people front-running it and catching people short, you think?
Well, I'm not sure that it's a done deal yet. I think there's still a ways to go when we have a couple of more days to see if there's going to be any other glitches. And I haven't seen the details yet. I think that the latest thing I heard was the number of beds for the detention center as the Democrats are trying to overreach a little bit.
Probably. It's stunning to me that, not that you would use them for that with all this stuff with Homeland Security and the Patriot Act and all these things, all this, and I'll say crap, how much money we spent for all that? I don't think, Brendan, we still have a spot to bring 50,000 people if we need to for a month for a dirty bomb or whatever it is. We don't have an old Army or Air Force base or whatever that has beds for 50,000 if we need them and wafers and water like they used to have for fallout shelters. I don't think we have anything like that.
I don't think we do either.
Even though I think we spent a real lot of money on God knows what. Is that...
Well, there was also a lot of money just arguing about this when you think about the number of troops that were sent down there, the additional facilities that were trying to be built, but the separation of the families and the legal costs involved and all of that. It's a tremendous amount of money with really no, I would say that there's no plan on what needs to be done or what should be done.
I have all kinds of heavy subjects to talk about you this morning. To you about this morning. I'll get my English straight at this hour after the ice storm. Very interesting yesterday. I had this long discussion with young Stephanie yesterday, who happens to be not tied up with an attorney. She has an attorney for a hubby, and she's becoming one, I think. Not in a bad way, so we started.
Yeah, you're just saying. I know, you're just saying.
And you know what, we were definitely talking on two different levels of the chessboard yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about the Sherman Act, which I love to talk about, and the Clayton Act, and how on an economic model, it's so obvious when somebody breaks the law. And yet, you know, and she, I'm sure, is correct that on the legal side, it's not so obvious, and you can't ever pin anybody down for that thing. That's why nobody even tries.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And yet, on the economic side, to me, it's about as clear as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I said, if somebody buys another drug company and there's a drug that only the two of you make, and all of a sudden you put the other guy out of business and you triple the price of yours, by definition, it's a combination resulting in a restraint of trade, and it's a felony. I mean, what more? And then she says, well, there's never usually one drug involved. There's usually four or five, and how do you know which one they bought it for? And, you know, they can tie this thing up for years with all kinds of BS, or legalese. Oh, I'll use the term legalese. I'll be nice to you guys. And there's no doubt she's right.
Mm-hmm.
And yet...
No, I agree with her on that. That you know, the semantics that are used, the arguments that can be raised, are the difficulties of the law, but also what makes our system great.
Well, to me, Brennan, it's not great, to be honest with you, because just as luck would have it, our buddy, I went to the club, worked out, anyway, not that everybody needs to know, give Greg a ride home, he says, hey, let's stop at the Club Lago for one. Okay, we pile in there, grab an appetizer, and that place has a lot of attorneys.
I'm sure your arm was twisted.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, arm was. I love going in there. It's a real nice place. And the only thing I don't like is having to park out in front for $8 on the street, which makes me want to put a water balloon on our mayor's head every time I do it. But water balloon's as bad as I'd ever get. So I bump into this attorney who I've talked to before, nice guy, and he's telling me, and this is the thing that just frosts the hell out of me, Brennan, because as you know, as most people know, I'm like a absolute gatherer of information. I love talking to people. I learn from everybody I talk to. Well, turns out this guy's, I think his kid goes to St. Ignatius. Someplace. Where one of the things to graduate every year is a certain amount of hours of community service. I don't know if, I mean, we didn't have to do that in high school, but a lot of people did in college, but they did it just to do it, not because you had to. Anyway, they go to this, food pantry. And, get a load of this. He says if the kid's under 16, he can't go unaccompanied, which means dad's doing community service as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they pick a food pantry, and he goes, it's 4 hours of serving up, you know, breakfast or lunch or whatever you're doing. He says, plus, he goes, it's really an eye-opener. He says, it's not necessarily what you want to do on a Saturday morning when you got three other kids, but anyway, he says, it has its rewards. He says, I mean, you know, Chief, you think you're feeding the homeless. You're not. You're feeding old people. They're just regular old people that have a house and everything else. They're broke because of their prescription drugs.
Yes.
Now,
yep, they're broke. Well, their prescription drugs is a big part of that.
Yeah, big part of that.
Their rent is also another part of it.
Well, I think you can, on Social Security, you can cover the rent, but you can't cover $800 a month in drugs.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is, somewhere along the line here, we need to realize what this is doing to people. And even though, you know, the silver-tongued attorney can somehow tie something up for 2 years, the fact is, Brennan, these combinations are restraining trade. They should be a felony. People should be in jail. Throw away the key. I mean, it's happening all over the place.
I agree with you. And when you look at the increase in a lot of the pharmaceuticals over the last couple of years, some of the drugs that are used in some cases for very common illnesses, but in some cases for those which overall affect just a small portion, where the price increase has gone up 1,000%. That's 11 times what it was just a couple of years ago. That's insane. And it's completely unjustifiable, in my opinion.
Well, some of these drugs are old. I mean, one of these days, you're going to have one aspirin company, and your aspirin's going to cost you $5 a pill instead of 2 cents.
Have you gone to a hospital lately to see what they charge for an aspirin?
It's more than
$5.
for them to get any pill up to somebody's room was, in their mind, more than that, probably, but it's a distribution system, as they say. You know what? Here's the concern you have. I've never been a parent, But, you know, I've been around other people's kids and been around dogs and stuff. Not that there's a connection between kids and dogs, but sometimes or another, sometimes you see something bad happen and you just got to let it play out. You know, you can't always get involved, I think. I mean, I've heard people tell me that.
That's correct.
I don't know what to do about this stock buyback issue that's now hitting front pages everywhere along the line. I'm gonna say, Brendan, that it's probably nothing that the Senate should get involved in terms of a law. But people have listened to the show. I've been ranting on essentially as one of my themes, and I really think I'm right on this, is that somewhere, someplace, and it's caused a lot of problems in this country, is we count on the corporate boards, the outside corporate boards, to somehow be a moral force, even if it's just making the corporations look more long-term than maybe the regular people, the employees would do that are getting paid, you know, bonuses based on the quarter or whatever. But somehow I think that whole thing is broken down, Brendan. I honestly do.
When you're talking about this, I mean, this gets into one of the primary disagreements between traditional Republicans and traditional Democrats as far as big government, small government. At what point can something be done, or should something be done, on the macro level across the country which takes into account congressional law, like the buyback on stocks? With the Tax Act last year, I don't think it's a surprise where we are this year, that a lot of those earnings were replowed back into buying stock back instead of giving a lot of raises to the employees or investing in more capital investments for the corporations. Same with the drug. At what point do you go on a macro level to, on a national level, to stop the price increase of drugs? That's a basic disagreement between Democratic and Republican philosophies, that the Democrats say you need more micromanagement of the government because the corporate boards aren't doing their jobs, and the Republicans will say, no, we will do our jobs as business people. We have a moral conscience, and we'll do our jobs.
I wasn't even going to go there. Matter of fact, we're way to the left of me on this.
I was being neutral on that. I wasn't taking a side on that. I'm just stating the difference between large government and small government, and at what time do you step in at that? That's the only point. I wasn't arguing the left side or not. I wasn't arguing for stepping in.
No, it's going to get me to the same place you are, but it's a totally different tact, believe it or not. You'll believe it or not after I say it. The fact that the people are buying stock back. Okay, now again, I don't know the law like you do, so I look at things economically. Most of the times, that's a really horrible decision economically. What I'm saying is, if you've got too much money in a place, you've got, you know, $20 billion, and some of these places can have a lot more than that. You got $20 billion, all you can do to invest the next year at a reasonable return is $5 billion, which normally means that you should return the rest of that to shareholders, because chances are they can find another company, another place that money could be more dear to them than it is to you. Okay,
right. The economy will grow that way.
The formula has always been, way back since you know, way before I was in grad school, was if you can find something to do with the money that's more accretive than the average shareholder probably is, it's up to you to invest it. And when you put the tax law in there, like if you give the money to somebody and he had to pay 50% dividend tax on it, then all you have to do is be able to do a little better than half as well as your shareholder, and you're better off keeping it and doing it yourself, correct?
Yes.
It's always been the economic model. Well, the fly in the ointment with this is, why would you ever buy back stock? Well, to most people who own stock, the stock's trading $50, you don't really care. Maybe, you know, you might be better off, actually, if they send you a check for $5 and now the stock's worth $45, because that's what a dividend should do, right? You're getting a check for $5, and now the stock was worth $50 with $5 a share in the place. It's going to be worth $45 after, right? That's the simple math. which a lot of people mm-hmm. don't get, actually. But that's what the math is. So you give it to somebody. Now, you might say to yourself, okay, well, what if we give somebody bonuses based on stock price? Now, if you give that to upper management, the last thing, if ever you want to deliver a massive fart in church, go into a boardroom and say we should declare a dividend. Because if somebody, if Matty Weber and Thomas have their strikes on their options struck at 52, and a stock is trading 40, and you propose a $5 dividend, the looks you're going to get, if not stuff thrown at you, it will be something you'll never see in a playground. Because mm-hmm. you just eviscerated their bonus, essentially.
Yeah.
Yep. So the board is one of those, it should be able to say, well, look it. What we'll do is we think the dividend is the right way to go. We'll move your strike down to 46 or 45 or 47, the amount of the dividend, because, you know, we're not going to screw you, but we think the dividend's the way to go, because that's what we really should do, is send the money back to our shareholders. But nobody wants to do that. They constantly will buy this stock back under the idea, first of all, they're idiots, because you can buy stock back all you want. Does anybody really think that Apple's trading, whatever, say 170, that because they bought 90 bazillion shares of stock last year, by the way, at an average price of like 220, that somehow or another the stock would be like 160 if they didn't do that? If they actually believe that, they're morons. Absolute morons. So what they really have done is pissed away $50 a share times however many they bought. Now, how does that help shareholders? And so the whole idea, just the idea that this is happening, that makes no sense economically, in my mind, means to me that the outside people are not in charge of these boards. Because this is a really bad economic thing to do. And this attempt to essentially drive the stock price up because you have an option, because your board is too dumb to just adjust the option.
Well, too dumb, or they're self-protective. I mean, what you're describing is a question of self-dealing, and where is the true fiduciary responsibility? Is it ostensibly to build a stronger corporation with more money so that you can continue to grow the company, or is it to return the dividends to the shareholders?
Well, you've already decided you're going to piss away the money. You already decided you're kicking the money out of the place. Now the question
is, how do you do it?
Do you give a dividend out? You obviously reward every shareholder to the extent that they're the ones that put money into the place. If you buy stock back, maybe if you're dumb, you think that you can raise the price of the stock over a long period of time, which you can't, because if the market is efficient, the market doesn't care who's buying or selling; it's still going to be priced the same way, right?
Right.
So you do this. What I'm saying is all these people in Congress are looking at this and are saying something's wrong. Okay, now whether they should try and fix it or not, I'm thinking maybe not. But I'm saying something's wrong, but for a totally different reason. It's wrong because of all the other reasons why we realize these boards. You don't see anybody, when a bank gets spanked for $6 billion, resigns from the board and said, I can't be a part of this. What have you seen that? They say, how much should we make on that? $8 million. You go, girl.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the board system is, I don't know how you replace it, Brendan, but one of the reasons why I believe, you should not be able to sit on a board. I don't think you or I could sit on a board that bought another company and tripled the price of aspirin to old people in our neighborhood. I don't think we could do that. And you can say it's just business. That's BS. It's just business. That's robbery.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But it is also difficult. Getting back to the original comment you made earlier about the Sherman Antitrust Act and the Clayton Act, there are arguments that would allow that, even though you know from an economic model that what's happening is Company A is buying Company B, and the reason they're doing that is because of some kind of a drug that the Company B has, and once Company A merges it, the price goes up dramatically because competition is removed.
Which is exactly what the law says.
Which allows it because Company A would say, we're not really buying because of that drug, we're buying because of the potential for six other drugs in the marketplace, and we can justify the increase in the cost because of market conditions and the testing requirements of how long it takes those other six drugs to get to the marketplace.
Which is such BS, I can't even begin to go with it. But, yeah, that's the argument. And also, yeah. I mean, you well, The Clayton Act says you can't have two-tiered pricing. And yet, mm-hmm. we walk into every hospital, and they've got four-tiered pricing.
Yep. And a lot of it depends on whether you're insured or not insured.
Right, and but the hospital, according to the Clayton Act, it says right there that's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about this? What about that? What about what?
Well, there are different structures that are built into that because of exceptions in the laws. Any large law, remember, is a compilation of the main purpose of the law and exceptions. And usually it's six. But I mean, you could, for example, have the entire tax code in about 30 pages. If you eliminated a lot of the deductions, if you eliminated a lot of the corporate structures that are exempted out in different ways, you could have a very, very simple tax code. That would not be acceptable to almost everybody in the country. And whether you're talking about corporate giants or whether you're talking about mom and pop who own a house, a bungalow on the south side. Because the things would be taken away that they don't want. They like the exceptions to the tax code. And it gets very convoluted, and it keeps a lot of lawyers and accountants in business.
Let's talk about that when we get at 7 o'clock, Brendan, when we have our just you and me, because Dr. J and I had that argument like a long time ago. It's an mm-hmm. interesting one. S&P Futures still down, up 1950. We're celebrating, allegedly, a border deal. We'll see if Trump will sign it. He has not tweeted out, I don't believe, yet whether he's going to sign it or not. We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Mayweather. I have Mr. Brendan Cornett on the phone. I have Mr. Joel on Canada in a second. S&P futures up 21 and a quarter. NASDAQ futures up 63, down up over 200 around the rest of the world. This is what our tentative deal on the border thing. Again, I've not heard. Also, we have OPEC is cutting production by nearly 800,000 barrels. Well, they did in January. So they pumped, this is a report of what they actually did, from what I understand here, which pumps just a little bit above their target, which means they cut back on the cheating, I guess is one way of looking at it. But they also pumped way less in January than was expected. DAX up 138, that's 1.2%. FTSE only up 15.2%. Again, those guys are kind of going their own way day to day with this Brexit thing. CAC around on 57, 1.1%. Over in Asia, we've got rallies across the board here. Nikkei up 531, so they made back the 2 point something they lost yesterday. That's 2.6, 20,864. Shanghai up 18, that's 0.7%. Hang Seng only up 27.1, but still everybody was up. It was higher. Again, oil, West Texas up $1.06, Brent up 136. The spread is now pushing $9.40, so it was almost back to 10 bucks. Natural gas up a penny, 266, still no movement there. RBOB up another 3 cents to $1.45, so we're starting to nudge up. I paid 10 cents more than I did last week out in the burbs. Home heating oil, $1.91. We've got gold up 470, 1316, making a little move this morning. Silver up 9 cents. Anybody got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, ice, spin-outs all over the place. I'll lead in for you.
Yeah, we won't get into every single one of them because it would take about 2 hours to go over it. All kinds of issues, as you can imagine. Good morning to everyone out there, 36 minutes past the hour. Due to the snowy and icy, rainy, sleety mixed conditions that we had beginning last night and that continued overnight, you can imagine there's all kinds of issues on the area. Expressways, roadways, tollways, and off the expressways as well. A lot of the exit ramps and bridges. I'll go over some of the significant stuff. It looks like Lakeshore Drive northbound between Randolph and Grand Avenue, Chief. I think you mentioned this earlier. There's a structural emergency on the bridge over the Chicago River. Traffic is diverted off at the Randolph-Wacker exit, and traffic is allowed to use lower Lakeshore Drive to re-enter at Grand. The closure will last at least through tonight and possibly through tomorrow. But that's causing all kinds of delays on Lakeshore Drive. And then on the south side, Lakeshore Drive.
Talking about the main bridge?
Yeah, that goes over the river. Lakeshore Drive southbound at 31st Street, there is an accident as well. On the south side, I-90-94 exit ramp at Garfield Boulevard. There was a crash. That exit ramp is very slippery, apparently. No issues on the Stevenson. Looks like Bishop Ford, I-57, looking okay as far as accidents are concerned. Same could be said for the Eisenhower. We did have an earlier crash on the Kennedy inbound just before Sacramento. That has been cleared, but the Kennedy is starting to pick up on traffic volume, and it's moving slow out there. Out in the western suburbs, all kinds of issues to report, but the big one is just west of 290 at Ontarioville Road and Lake Street. There is a significant crash with multi-vehicles involved. Give yourself plenty of time as you're heading out this morning. Take public transportation if that's an option, although I hear that the train lines in northwest Indiana and on the south shore there are all having all kinds of issues because of the ice, so hopefully.
The one thing you can't have if you got overhead wiring is ice.
Yeah, and they got some issues down there. Weather today, the rain and snow mix will continue on and off, at least this morning. We'll reach a high of 35 degrees. We're right there pretty much right now. It's overcast and 33, so we're going to hover right in this just above freezing range in the city. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 70 today. Right now it's clear and 36. In sports, the Bulls lost a franchise record 11 straight home game last night. They lost to the first place Bucks 112-99. Chris Dunn left with an injury in that one. Bulls continue to tank their way, hopefully to a number one overall pick. We shall see. Suns were off. Blackhawks and Coyotes were off. No significant college hoops action for our local teams, but the Blackhawks have a big game tonight. They skate in Boston looking for their eighth straight win. Chief.
I'm not so sure if I went to a and watched the game at Mount Greenwood Park in a league and saw one team tanking that I'd want to be there for free, much less pay $350 for a seat.
You and me both.
Just saying. Joel, how are you?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing? On a, it sounds like a icy Tuesday morning there in the Windy City.
Well, if, in the city, I'm going to say it's 35 degrees, so you're actually slushing along. If it was another 5 degrees, we'd be slipping and sliding. It'll be but the burbs, it's worse. On bridges, it's worse. But so is your Detroit team tanking, or the Hawks just kicked their ass last night?
Oh man. I don't know what they're. I mean, I think every Detroit team is pretty much should be, if they're not in the tanking mode, should be in the tanking mode. But yeah, that the Hawks put the hurt to them, and Bulls and. Bulls, 11 straight loss at home. That's kind of hard to believe, Chief. 11 straight. Who's coaching the Bulls now?
Well, they had two guys that started to come off the bench, and one guy came back from injury, Bobby Portis, and he had two best games of his life in a row. And Jabari Parker had a big game down in Miami and actually won on the road, and they traded those guys like instantly.
And by the way,
I guess it's all the Zion Williamson sweepstakes. I mean, right? That's who everyone wants.
Yeah, there's basically four teams that are competing for him. The Bulls and the Suns are among them, and the Knicks are right there. And these teams are horrendous, and he would be a big game changer.
Well, you still get the lottery though. What's the current lottery, man? It's not 19. So
I mean, depends what your chances are in the lottery. Correct.
Top 13 teams, are in the lottery.
Right.
In the bottom 13 teams.
Well, depending on how you look at it, yeah.
Well, I thought it was 9. It's now 13.
Well, no, I think it's actually it's all the teams that don't make the playoffs. So I think it might be 14.
So, but if you just don't make the playoffs, what are your chances of like one in a bazillion?
Yes. But the Bulls got Derrick Rose with like a 1.9% chance or something like
that.
Was
it rigged?
Could have been.
Well, the Patrick Ewing was allegedly rigged.
That's what I hear. Hopefully, the Zion to either New York or Chicago is rigged, because it would be good for the league for him to play in one of those.
Well,
places.
Well, no, I've seen him play maybe a couple times and not studied him. But is he a Wilt Chamberlain or a Kareem Jabbar, where people knew that he was number one, everybody else was a kid?
No comparison, Chief. He'd be. I mean, he's just got tremendous size. I think he'd be the third heaviest player in the NBA right now. But he's just muscle 6'7", 6'8". Just hands down. I mean, there was even some speculation that he got a little dinged earlier in the year, whether or not he should even finish up his freshman year at Duke, to get ready for the draft. But obviously, he's staying with it. They got two other guys that are probably going to be in the top five, top ten in the upcoming NBA draft. So as much as I love my Michigan team, boy, I tell you, Duke is looking tough. And then also Tennessee has a core of three players that are averaging about 15, 20 points a game. So we're on a nice run. We got Maryland at home on Saturday. But boy, oh boy, the Zion is the real deal.
So he's another Karl Malone at that size and that strength, pretty much.
I think he can dribble better. I think he's better with the ball.
Really?
And, better from the outside as well. I mean, he's really being touted. But, you know, of course, once you get to the next level and actually play, it's hard to say, but I sure would love to see the Pistons get him. They need somebody.
Yeah, Barkley is the comparison. Even though Zion's much more athletic, but Barkley's the comparison.
Barkley's only 6'6 or 6'5, though.
Yeah,
right?
Zion's a little taller, and he's got like a 45-inch vertical, which makes him insane for how big he is. But he plays like Barkley. He's just a wrecking ball out there.
Really, the round mound of rebound.
Yeah, that's right, Chief. Markets are bright up this morning. You get a little border deal here, possible to avoid a shutdown. Trump wants to meet with Xi in China, so more optimism on that. I just alert your listeners, you know, we are coming up on the high of the rebound, by another 10 points higher in the S&P, and getting a lot of it overnight. The high closed the move, been right here at 27.31. So market looking good this morning.
So
not such a great earnings season.
All right, so we have we're talking about this with David yesterday. What's your opinion? We have some kind of half-assed border deal, but we get a deal. And it's out of the news, and we get something going on with China, although I still can't believe they're going to admit that they were stealing stuff.
Correct.
But say they do. In the market, now, this one's worth 20 points, and maybe we'll be up 30 in the spoos today if it actually comes through, maybe 40. Now, the other one's going to be worth another 30 or 40, maybe more. Then what? Do we sell, or are we off to the races?
You know what? It's a great point that you're bringing up, Chief. And what's been going on with this since it started is that there's been a nice pop, relief pop, and then it's kind of faded. I mean, you know, you can't guarantee that that's going to happen today. You know me, I stick with my levels. If we can break up, you know, above 2740, 2800, here we come. But on the last few pops, you know, you've had this, especially when it comes overnight. You'll see some overnight profit taking come in as well. But it's been a pop, and then a drop has been the past history with this. I mean, we still don't have a deal yet. He wants to meet. I mean, yesterday he was going to double the tab. So, you know, keep your eye on your Twitter feed and see what's coming out of the White House, because that's dictating
in
the market.
Yesterday they were going to double. Now, do you think, real quick, yes or no answer, you only got 20 seconds.
Is
this because the people who see the news first, front run it, and you catch people short, or is this celebration because of the news, or both?
I mean, there's definitely algos trading the news off it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, shorts are jammed no matter what, you know, in these kind of markets. So I just think it's your algos, man. They're just picking it up and buying, lifting offers in the after hours and pre-market trading. Same thing in the S&Ps. You know, you can't beat the bots, Chief.
I was thinking congressional staffers and people like that.
Come on.
Oh, no, they would never do something like that. Joel, thank you very much, buddy. Talk to you next week. SP Futures up 20, 25. NASDAQ Futures up 62. Come back, Mr. Kenny Pulcheri. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Kenny Pulcheri with us. We also have Mr. Brendan Carnan with us as well. S&P futures up 1975. NASDAQ futures up 5960. Dow up over 200. We're trying to celebrate allegedly a deal here, although I've not heard, I'm not Mr. Tweet, but that the president has opined in on this yet. So right now it hasn't said he isn't either. So, Kenny, how are you, bud?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay, hanging in there. We
I am not buying into the fact that this market's up 20 points and the Dow's up over 200 on the fact that we avoided the U.S. government shutdown. I think that's ridiculous, and I think that the media and the people that are selling that story about the relief in the markets over the government shutdown is causing the markets to rally is baloney, especially when they talk about the Asian markets are up, the European markets are up, all because we avoided a government shutdown. I'm sitting there scratching my head going, are Asian investors and European investors really deciding to buy or sell stocks in their own countries or regions of the world based on whether we build a wall and shut our government down? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that that story is the one that they're crediting to the action around the world. Certainly the action around the world, in my opinion, is much more directed at, you know, the ongoing talks with the U.S. and China, and the fact that now, you know, Kellyanne Conway leaks the fact that Trump wants to get this deal done, and Trump wants to meet Xi, and Xi wants to meet Trump, and Xi wants to come to Mar-a-Lago. And all that stuff is very positive. I get it. But we've seen this story before. 2 weeks ago, they tell the story, everything's great. The market rallies, and then Larry Kudlow comes out and says, well, we're far apart. Wilbur Ross comes out and says, oh, we're nowhere near a deal. And the market crashes. And then they come out and they say, no, we're close to a deal. Get into the market rallies. And then they're going to come out and say, well, not so much yet. The market's going to collapse. So it's this frustrating drama that continues to go on. I think that frustrates, you know, investors. It frustrates, certainly it frustrates people like me, as you can probably tell.
I'm going to say,
my ranting as I continue just to sit back and watch the drama unfold.
I'm going to say that Mr. K. Pulcheri is extremely jealous that he's not sitting in the White House trading this like these other guys are.
which is, by the way, another issue that we should all be concerned about, because clearly with the way the algorithms react and the way the market is so fractured and fragmented, everybody realizes they say one thing, the market rallies. They say another, the market sells off. And so then it calls into question, who's setting themselves up before the announcement comes out for the market to rally, and who's setting themselves up before the market, before they announce that the deal is faltering and the market collapses? That's a very, very interesting question.
Who down in D.C. is
trading the market based on news that's coming out or about to come out, which is a whole other conversation we could have, which is going to take way too much time for this interview. So
did you listen to your
that thought lingering?
Did you listen to your future ex-wife AOC grilling people in Congress regarding what's legal and illegal?
Yeah, no, I didn't, but I'd love to watch that little clip.
It was terrific. Absolutely, we had it on the show yesterday. We listened to
that and watch that clip.
Maddie, what time did we have it on yesterday? We'll send it to you, Kenny.
Yeah, it's like 3 minutes. Yeah. It's actually really good.
Because it was 5 minutes, and this one cut it down to three, so it was listenable. But she was quizzing.
And she was grilling members of Congress about what?
No. She was grilling three members of, I guess, the Justice Department on what exactly was legal and wasn't legal. And then could somebody run for office and only take money from four or five PACs? The answer was yes. Could then in Congress, could you shape legislation toward those people? Was that a problem? No, it's no problem. And by the way, could you buy stock all along the way? No, that was no problem either.
Right.
It was about what is legal. And then she says, then they said, well, actually, Congress has a few because of some of the ethics laws that Congress has passed for themselves. Not laws, but the ethics, whatever right. you want to call them, that the president has none. The president whatever he wants. So virtually anybody there in the White House really can front run this stuff without any shred of...
And listen, you know, we laugh about it. We're making a joke about it. But the fact is that absolutely is a conversation that I hear going around, whether you're talking to investors, whether you're talking to institutions, whether you're talking to people that are just frustrated with the volatility that you see. And all of a sudden these massive spikes in the market. And then, you know, at midday, someone comes out from the White House and paints a negative story and the market collapses. And so, you know, somebody's going to do a study on it and somebody should find out, because it is absolutely a part of the chatter that's out there.
Kenny, if you and I have been doing this for, let's say, way too long, when I sit here day after day after day, and you're standing on the New York floor, if you did for many, many years, and all of a sudden you see everybody's basically twiddling something, and all of a sudden the spoos run 20 points, and you're going to go, okay, right. who's it going to be today? Munchkin or Cudlow going to come out and say everything's okay? And then all of a sudden it goes down, and uh-oh, who's going to say that it's not a deal? Let me ask you this. From your Italian, fairly tough Boston background, which is worse, that they're trading it or they're too dumb to trade it?
Wow. Yeah, that's a very interesting question, because if they're too dumb to trade it, honestly, you should slap them upside the head if they're too dumb to trade it. But if they're trading it, you know, that also then puts it, that calls into question a whole range of issues about their ability to, you know, have access to the markets. Because, look, you and I don't have access to the markets like that. We don't know what the conversation is in the Oval Office and what they're saying and what they're not saying. But they've got plenty of time to have the conversation and then go out and set themselves up for, oh, wow, the market's going to rally once this gets out, or the market's going to collapse once this gets out. And so there's a real, real conflict there in terms of what they're able to do, should they even be able to do it, or should they be barred from trading in the markets based on inside information.
Well, the morals of it is, you and I would never do it because of our upbringing. When I got to the trading floor, Kenny, I found that there's two kinds of people in the world. If you have access to information and it's wrong to trade on it, you and I, and Manny Weber, even though he disdains his Catholic upbringing, he would never do it either. But he would say it was his idea, not the nuns. You and I at least would be smart enough to say the nun would kill me if I did that. But there's other people in the world that say that's why I went to that particular boarding school. I didn't like it. I went there because my rules are different than other people's rules. I get to trade this stuff. That's why I put up with this crap in Washington. That's my advantage.
Right.
I mean, it's just a different, it's a different mindset. I can't stand that mindset, but then again, they don't care about me either, you know, so.
Right.
I mean, but for this is seriously marketable crap. Just right. Like 5 years ago when you and I were on the air and we talk about some Fed guy going over and giving a speech at 3 o'clock in the morning in China talking about how they're really going to be more dovish than they were the day before when the market was down and we turned 40 points in the middle of the night. You can't tell me that right. That thing is not tradable.
Well, that's right. But you know, I alluded to this in my note today that, you know, when the markets traded, when we traded fractions of a dollar and only 7 price points at one location, the markets didn't react and people did not react as quickly. First of all, they couldn't, right? The automation wasn't there to allow it to happen. And they couldn't react and it was a very expensive. If you made a mistake, it could cut you very, very quickly because of the increment of trading. Today, because we trade in sub pennies and there's 1,000 price points, between $20 and $21 is 1,000 opportunities to trade, that the ability for people in the automation that can react so instantaneously, if it's wrong, you can get out just as fast as you can get in. Yeah, it might hurt a little bit. It's going to hurt less, though, than it might have in a fractional environment. So that's also part of the problem, along with, you know, the fragmentation and the 50-plus venues where you can arbitrage and buy and sell stock. It only creates the chaos and confusion, which for some of the trader types is great. For the long-term investor type, is frustrating.
Kenny, I have a quick one for you. We don't have much time, and you can believe me here or not. I think you normally do. I had a class with none other than Milton Friedman, and one day somebody asked him, which was nothing a part of the class, what do you think about insider trading? And he said there should be no rules against it.
Really?
Now in his mindset, your trading was done on the New York Stock Exchange. It was done on the Board of Trade. It was done on the Options Exchange. So right. You actually, if somebody comes running in a second before the earnings and he's right 2 months in a row, he's liable to get one off his eyeball the next time in there. You know, or nobody
right.
Or nobody will trade with him. His point was it would be self-policing, but it's not self-policing if it's anonymous.
Well, that's correct. And you're right. At one point when it all happened on the floor and you were a floor broker and you were in a crowd, you knew, you know, if that was the pattern, you knew it, right? And it was clear. But in today's environment, just like I said, because it's so fractured and because it's anonymous and because it's automated and because, you know, the sub-decimalization, you don't feel it anymore. You certainly can't see it. Whether or not the regulators can track it is a whole other conversation we should be having.
Well, do they want to track it? I'm thinking no. If it's you or me, they'll track it. But if it's the White House,
yeah,
they're not going
to track it. Yeah, if it's you and me, they'll track it. For sure. If it's you and me, you're kidding me? They're dying to take one of us away.
Manny, look what we're doing to Kenny. Or was he that way already? I think you were already halfway there, Kenny. He was always very suspicious.
You get me all worked up every Tuesday morning.
All right, buddy, take care of yourself. Have a nice week. SP Futures up 1875. NASDAQ Futures up 55. Back to Mr. Brennan after the break.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi. This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Weber on the board. Mr. Brennan Cornett on the phone. SP Futures up 1975. We've been stuck pretty much right about there since we came in. Same thing with the NASDAQ up 5775, and the Dow's up around 200. Brendan, I'm looking at this picture of the damage on the bridge of Lakeshore Drive. You want to tell me how the hell these people waited till yesterday to close this thing?
Isn't that amazing when you see that crack? And I think that's symptomatic of both other bridges around the Chicagoland area in the state of Illinois and nationwide, and just increases the argument for a big infrastructure deal that's necessary in Congress and at the state level to maintain our infrastructure and our bridges. We're very lucky that bridge didn't drop more like what happened in Minnesota, what was it, about 10 or 12 years ago?
When the sudden collapse.
People were killed when the bridges collapsed. When you look at the damage on that bridge at Lakeshore Drive, we're very fortunate.
Well, we're not fortunate that we let the thing get built like that in the first place. Just saying.
Well, I mean, we're fortunate that nobody was hurt yesterday.
Yes.
When that started to break the way. I mean, that's a significant crack, and apparently the reason that they are closing it for a longer period of time is that they found additional cracks in the beams that are further to the west on that, around that same area where the joist is put in place.
The joist has all the concrete missing, so you can see the steel inside the concrete.
Rebar?
The rebar.
Oh, the rebar.
Which indicates to me that there's stress on that. And that thing that's causing that one side. This thing is leaning west. That's why that concrete is breaking on that side. I remember a little something from my Pullman days. How this has just been spotted yesterday is an embarrassment.
Well, it's unclear whether it had been forming a while ago or with the recent weather it was just a sudden crack overnight. But you're right. Why wasn't it discovered? Why wasn't it even inspected last week? After the polar vortex came and we were at, 50 below, in wind chill and 25, 26 below in actual temperature, they had to know that there was a stress level on the bridge and all the steel
in that bridge and how many other bridges around town. I mean, think about the Skyway Bridge near the border for Indiana. Think about the stress on something like that. And that bridge is a lot older than the bridge on Lakeshore Drive.
But it's incredibly better built. It's built on steel girders instead of concrete.
True. But my point is, you know, how much examination is being given to the infrastructure all around the country right now?
If you were at a Pullman meeting with a bunch of engineers, they would be all over you because your conversation was inaccurate according to the engineers would be, because you're combining infrastructure maintenance and the way we do business here in this country in some of the areas, and they don't match at all because there is no infrastructure maintenance of any consequence.
My point is that there should be.
Well, but here's, if you're going to do this, and by the way, I used to mention this out to our older mayor, Mayor Daley. I used to talk to him on Saturdays at the club when nobody else was there. I was there once in a while. My brother and he talked all the time because they were always there on Saturday together. But he says to me, how come I have to go somewhere else to buy railroad cars and it costs like a fortune? And I said, well, Mayor, because of you and other people like you. And he's like, well, what are you talking about? I said, first of all, you've got X number of thousand cars in the CTA fleet. Now, they last, I'm going to say, 22 years of stainless steel cars. After 12 years, they should be brought in for a complete makeover. But you still, obviously the structure, if it's stainless, is going to last you forever. So you can put all the electronics in it. You can put all the new latest gadgets, all that kind of stuff, new air conditioners. You can do this. I said, but you should have a situation where a plant, Chicago if you want, we have plenty of room, produces four cars a month. However many cars you have divided into 22 years is what should be delivered per month. And every month when the four show up, you take the four oldest ones and you scrap them.
Uh-huh.
And this is how you maintain. And that way, if there's ever any problem in the fleet, if there's some kind of a recall, the place is right here. You can run the cars right over them and fix them. And this plant can have, I'm going to say, 40, 50 people, maybe 100. I mean, I'm so rusty in my plant configuration. That have a job now till hell freezes over, basically. And you're going to get a cheap price because the same people, you're going to give the suppliers a supply run that's going to last decades. So you're going to be able to work. You can find other people. You can actively go out and compete for product. You don't have to rely on one supplier over a period of time. All kinds of good reasons why this is the way it should be. Don't let the entire thing fall apart and then say, we need 2,000 cars and go out and find a price. Because nothing could be more inefficient. Same way with your bridge structures. There's how many footings in the CTA system? They last 100 years. Divide them by 100 years. I'll bet you should be doing four footings a week. Put a crew out there of 10 guys, 15 guys or ladies or whatever, four footings a week. And when you get done 100 years from now, you go back to the other end and start all over again. That's how you actively maintain. We've had a history here, Brent. You see all those bridges across the Chicago River that are relatively new compared to the old ones?
Yeah.
Every single one of those, I'm not telling you anything, I'm telling the listeners, because you know what I'm talking about. Every single one of those was allowed to reach the point where it was no longer safe. It was condemned, in which case you can go to the federal government for emergency money. If you just maintained it, a steel bridge can be maintained pretty much forever. If on one side of the, you know, you start sanding and painting and you get to the other side and a year later you do the same thing. They should be a crew or two crews on all these bridges constantly. And because it's not like the Golden Gate where it's so big it takes 2 years to do it. It wouldn't take 2 years. It'd probably take you 3 months to do a bridge, move to the next bridge, and when you get all done, you go back to the other end of the river and you start all over again. This is how you normally would do things like this, but we don't do this. We never do this.
I agree with you. That's a danger zone, and the cost goes up exponentially.
Sure.
When you have to completely tear down and rebuild a new bridge instead of the maintenance.
But if your motivation is now to get federal money instead of state money, because I don't think the feds pay for the maintenance. I don't know about that. That's more of a Brendan question than you. I think they pay just for the new bridge. So what I think is happening, if you want to get all this Fed money, and of course you tell them the bridge is going to cost you $40 million, but it's really going to cost you $30. So you get two or three of your political hacks to build the damn thing. They got money in their pocket, so every time you need Matty Weber to get a judgeship, you can call those three people up and say, go buy 100 tickets to the judgeship party. If that's the way, if that's the way politics is run in Chicago, that's why whenever they talk about infrastructure program, as much as I know we need it, Brendan, I absolutely shudder because I know they're going to totally overpay for everything.
Yep.
Which is now we...
And the cost overruns. Once construction starts, sure. You have change orders and cost overruns that increase the price dramatically.
But you look at this picture in the Tribune, I'm going to say, Brendan, not being an engineer, this thing was put up. I'll bet it's this the support, concrete post support, I'll bet it's slightly off. It's been off since the day they built it, and that's why the stress came to that spot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised, but I'm not an engineer, so I can't give you a real good opinion on that, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's true.
The interesting, I was talking to some guy. Imagine that, Brendan, me talking to some guy. I got a guy. These guys were doing all this work on the Chicago elevated structure near my house. So, of course, I go into one of the local taverns, and there's the guys in there after work. And everybody knows, that that for purposes of today's railroad cars, now, granted, there's been some degradation over time, but the elevated structure is amazingly overbuilt for today's cars because the original ones were actually steam cars, right? They had to be three times as heavy. So the thing is overbuilt for today's use. So I said to the guy, plus it's done in rivets. It's done by the same, essentially the same sort of architecture that the Eiffel Tower is. It was all riveted. Same way with the Golden Gate Bridge. They didn't use bolts in those days. They riveted it. And anyway, so I said to the guy, now you got 20 rivets along, you know, these things. I said, everybody knows that you don't need all 20 because the load on the bridge is, or the superstructure is lighter than it was design-wise. He goes, oh yeah, everybody knows that. You could be missing 1, 2, 3, or 4. He goes, but I'll tell you what, nobody can tell you exactly how many you can be missing before it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
How scary is that? He goes, nobody knows if it, we know if you pull one out, you're okay. If you pull two out, you're okay. I'm not gonna take a bet on five. Mm-hmm. You know, interesting conversation. Because it is
and
really hard.
Five.
It is hard to tell how much. Now this particular concrete post, now you notice that this rebar is not coated. If it was coated, it wouldn't mm-hmm. be rusted. All the stuff now you build with is coated with that green stuff.
Yep.
So there's work to do on this bridge. This is not just, you know, I'll bet this is a 2-year fix. After you prop
it up. I'm very surprised they said it's going to be operational again by the end of the day today. You're talking about shoring up the bottom part of that with some steel supports and letting traffic back on it. But I'd be very surprised if this doesn't turn into a major issue.
You're going to see on either side of this concrete support probably 100 8x8, 12x12 wood things on the ground and see a big... Iron structure that's going to support it on both sides of this column, so the column is essentially not needed. Same thing they did on the, remember when it was breaking on the L tracks on 22nd Street? That those temporary supports were there, what, 15 years?
Mm-hmm.
Before they redid the whole system? This is scary, Brendan, because it shows a total breakdown all along the line. I mean, it's, can anybody, and whether the president is Clinton, Obama, Trump, Bush, I don't think these guys can count on their infrastructure, their employees to do the job right. I mean, Bush didn't deserve an FBI that tossed away, you know, memos of guys learning to fly planes, didn't care if they could land. I mean, who was Katrina? Was that Bush too?
Yeah, that was under Bush.
They both were. Yeah.
I mean, he didn't deserve somebody saying this thing's leaking into my backyard. You guys better come out and fix it. Nobody did. And then the Homeland Security being total idiots. I mean, now they're way better now. They're better trained. But these guys don't deserve that. They have to wonder, is anybody under my command here competent? I mean, I think the military is. I mean, they seem to have shown that. But are any of these people, can they do the job? Do the inspectors inspect? I mean, are people doing what they're supposed to do, or are they tweeting all day, for God's sake? I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think there's also what is the directive? What is their mission to do that? I mean,
where are they supposed to inspect, and how are they supposed to inspect in the case of infrastructure? And how much can they say, like you were talking about before, the example with the rivets, how many rivets can you take out? Even if you see a problem in a bridge or a tollway or something like that, how far further can we push this before we really have to do something? Because the cost and the priorities for spending the limited amount of money we have has to go elsewhere.
And I can remember, and again, this is not Matty winging up Andy and Mayberry, some of the guys who came to work for Pullman, program managers that had worked for some of the various authorities, and one of the guys I remember, his name was Bob Long, kind of a character, but he had in his room, they gave him an office, right? Well, I don't know who he got to bring all this crap in there, but he had books and books and books about going out for bids on bridges, on roads, on you name it, sewer systems, and every one of them was how to do a bid on every one of those things. And he would say that when you go out for a bid, the city of Chicago people, but these are really good jobs to work for the city. I mean, you're not just the mayor's, coffee boy or coffee girl. I mean, if you are in charge of something like the burn interchange project, you should be a very serious senior person, not just get slapped around by the contractors. And those are not only they should be well paying good jobs, they should be a job that you feel good about, that you bring a project in at a good price that you know is going to last till your grandkids are driving on the damn thing. And these can be very rewarding spots, Brennan. And those guys, Bob Long used to tell me, he goes, when you go out for bid on one of these things, two bad things can happen. He says, well, first of all, the bid has to be exactly what you want. And before you go out to anybody, you need to price it. You need to know exactly what the price should come in at. Because two bad things can happen to you. One is somebody comes in and hits you with a high bid and you take it. He said, 100 years from now, even though you pissed away dough, people probably aren't going to care so much about that. Even though if you're going to miss, you don't mind missing high a little bit. He said, but if you miss low, and you know the guy forgot something, and that, you're going to spend the next 3 years while this thing goes up wondering where he's going to stiff you.
Uh-huh.
Because somewhere along the line he's going to take a shortcut, and 20 years from now this thing's going to fall down. he says, it's up to you to go to that guy and say, Mr. Weber, I priced out these railroad cars at $800,000. That's given you 10% profit, which I think is fair. How is it you came in at 600? Like, what did you forget, you idiot? We forgot the air conditioners. Oops. but they're going to try and make that back on you somewhere. So
I agree with all of that. That once you go out the bid, whether the procurement or the contract manager for something like the bridge, you need to know the cost elements are involved so that you know that the lowest bid is not necessarily the best bid. In the municipal world, they talk about receiving the lowest and most responsible bid. And typically, if you see somebody who's way low, you understand that's not what we really want. We're not just going to pay $10 instead of $100 for, some supplies, because the quality isn't there. Or, take that in the context of a bridge. You're not going to pay $1 billion for something that really is going to cost $5 billion, because that lower cost is not going to be a responsible bid.
The only thing you can do in some of the municipal projects, and this goes back to the story about Buzzy Passion on the Dan Ryan, if you have such a generous completion clause early and somebody puts more people on the job, sometimes they can bid it under cost and make it up on the, and actually have a huge profit because they finished it early because they hustled. Which means you really
there are some incentive clauses in a lot of the contracts just for that reason.
But which means you should take them out of there, because then it skews your whole bid.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that story?
Yeah.
The normal, I don't know, was it Walsh? I don't know, whoever did the quick story. I'll make it a Cliff Notes version. There's two bridges that leave downtown on the Dan Ryan. Essentially, it's a bridge leaving downtown all the way to essentially Comiskey Park, almost. Let's say 28th Street, and then it drops down into the ditch. but that's all above ground. And so both of those bridges needed to be totally redone. You know, they'd been there, you know, whatever, 40 years or something. So they went out for contract on the first one, and I think Walsh or somebody like that, some of the bigger names, I'm not positive, I shouldn't know a lot of the name out there, but had the first one, they finish it up, they get a bonus. Well, it was two separate bids. So he left all his equipment there and everything. He was about as confident as you could get that he was going to win the next year's bid. So Buzzy Passion looks at the thing and he goes, wow, these guys could have gone a lot faster. And he sees this incredible how much money you made per day by finishing early. So Buzzy bids the thing ridiculously low. Walsh is outraged. But they give it to Buzzy. He finishes the thing, like a month early? I mean, he had people out there, like there were people all over the place. He finishes the thing a month, 6 weeks early, gets his massive check for finishing early, and actually makes a fortune on the deal, even though he bid the thing like less than the price of cement. Which was, well, of course, guess what happens a year later to the guy, Brennan? The feds and everybody show up at his place, go through his accounting, and throw him in jail. You think there was a connection? Oops. You think there was a connection in Chicago?
Yeah.
Isn't that scary? What do you think of that story, Manny?
That's scary.
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it? So, Brennan, before the break, we were talking a little bit about some with the corporate stuff and how people are being overcharged, and we're talking about the prescription drugs and all those kinds of things. Now it's leaking into this. You know, should people be able to buy their stock back? What do you do when you're a government and you kind of notice stuff just isn't right? But I don't know that we have the capability of rewriting corporate law at this point. Do you? I mean, I don't know if I want to go down that road, but I also know that it's kind of dysfunctional what's happening at the board level. I mean, how many places now have stock where the, like, A and B stock, where the guy gets the controller without even having a board, or how many people now where all you do is hire everybody's on everybody else's board? I mean, I think corporations are too strong to have that happen. And yet, how do you fix it? I mean, the SEC is kind of up to their eyeballs in making it difficult for outside people to get on the board, which they shouldn't be. But how do you go about fixing it? Let's put it this way. How do you go about making sure it's fair enough to operate properly and that just becomes an internal, there's no election, there's no anything?
Well, I think you hit on one of the problems already, that it's a limited number of people who are on several boards. And when they're looking for compensation for either the board members or the officers of a corporation, who do they look to? They look to the other corporations that they are on. And in order to, and there's a reward system for, the CEOs, the CFOs, and if they go from one corporation to another, either on the board or in an officer's capacity, they're going to be rewarded. And that is a problem. So you're right, to open it up, get more diversity from different walks of life, not just the same people over and over again. But as far as changing laws right now, I think it would be very, very difficult, if not impossible, to change the corporate structure and a lot of the corporate law or the corporate tax laws in many ways, just because of how ingrained they are in the economy right now. To do so would really cause a massive disruption in the economy that I think would be very harmful.
Here's one I would do. Brennan, well, first thing I would do in the tax law, I'd do two things. I'd get rid of the only $3,000 a year if you lose money either in stock or in business. I'd make that like 100. Okay, uh-huh. But I'd also change, I'd like to see, well, this is, I know this is being very naive, I'd like to see everybody, I use the term even. So the highest level tax that an individual pays, if it's 32%, that's what a corporation should pay, or an LLC should pay. Everybody should pay the same amount at the high level, I think. So what I'd like to see on the corporate side is that I don't like the double taxation of corporation paying a tax and then the person getting the dividend paying a tax.
Uh-huh.
I think the corporation should have to pay 32% on everything, not the 21% they're paying now.
And no pass-through.
Well, but if they pay a dividend, they should get a 20% or whatever that would get them down to 21. They should get a 10% kick on the dividend, because then the person who gets it, or 20%, whatever it is, then the person who gets it has to pay 20% on it. So the idea that's why Warren Buffett gets away with keeping all the money, because of the double taxation. There shouldn't be double taxation. It should come out even. I mean, it's been a big weakness ever since I was in grad school. I felt that way. And I think you need, the reason the corporation shouldn't pay 21 and a person 32. Corporation should pay 32. If they pay out the dividend, they should pay 21% on the part they paid out, and the other person should have to make up, pay the other 10 to get them back up to 32. So you should all end up at 32, I think. But then again, I like fairness, but other people don't like fairness. You want to be the person who's on the advantage. Just saying.
No, I agree with that. That's a good workable solution. I don't think you're going to get a lot of support for that.
Why?
I think on both sides, whether you're looking at the conservative model from the Republican side or the more liberal, they're entrenched in different ways. I think that you know, the equality argument would certainly go a long way on the liberal side to make things more even, but I just think that there's going to be there's too much diversification right now and the polarity right now too.
But how am I hurting the right? How am I hurting the right?
Are you hurting the right?
Yeah, how am I hurting the conservative side?
Well, whether you're hurting them or not, I think that we're at a point right now where just because the left is in favor of something, they will oppose it.
You can't call me on the left. We have a left radio station in the city. They refuse to take us because we weren't left enough.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think
I understand that. I just don't think that I don't think you're going to get the laws in Congress to change right now.
Oh, I don't think either. But I'm saying that to me is fair. I mean, why? I mean, the company shouldn't pay tax on something, and then the person have to pay it because that's caused your Microsoft, your Apples, your Warren Buffett. That's what's caused people to have the excuse to keep this massive treasure trough of cash instead of giving it to the owners.
I agree with you.
Which so you need to shake that up a little. And I think the reason for it is because for a long time, Brendan, the company paid 35% and a person could pay 50 on the same money. Mm-hmm. Well, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I agree. The whole concept of the double taxation is unfair and wrong. But that's part of the complex tax code right now, where we are today.
All right, Brendan, thanks, buddy. We can let you sign off. We got John Neal coming after the break. We'll talk to you hopefully in studio next Tuesday with a little better weather.
Yeah, hopefully.
Right, take care of yourself, buddy. S&P futures still up 19. NASDAQ futures up 55. 50. Dow futures still up 200. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments, You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamale, Mr. Matt Weber. Should have Mr. John Neal in a second coming out of sunny Arizona. Pitchers and catchers reporting today. Today's a big day, Manny.
That's right.
S&P futures up 19. NASDAQ futures up 55. 75. Dow futures up 199. 199. DAX up 118. 1%. Full 1%. What's he now down a point? Call that flat. They must be fighting about Brexit. CAC around up 46.9%. Over in Asia, we've got rallies here as well. Nikkei up 531, coming back the entire 400 whack yesterday. Plus some. It's 2.6. 20,864. Now the big number. Shanghai up 18.7%. Hang Seng only up 27, still up 0.1%. Big move today in oil. Up $1.06, it's 2%. Then up $1.36 as the statistics out of OPEC, where the Saudi was only, or OPEC was only 800,000 barrels cut, as they said they were going to do. They actually got back, believe it or not, to where their quota actually is. They're usually well above their quota because they cheat. Natural gas up 3 cents, 267. Arbob gas up 3 cents, 145. Home heating oil up 2 cents, 192. We even have a rally in gold today, but it's not as much as it was earlier. Only up 470, was up over 6. Silver up a dime. Maybe we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Believe it or not, Chief, there's not as many accidents as you would think, but there's all kinds of slow travel times due to the slushy, wet conditions out there. I think we're a few degrees too warm for it to be as icy as as it could have been.
We've dodged about 3 of these the last week or two.
We really have. And there are significant travel delays because of it, but there's not as many spin-outs as there was earlier this morning and overnight, as it's just too warm out there. So that's good news. Edens and Kennedy's moving very slowly. We had an earlier crash on the Kennedy at Sacramento. That's all clear now, but some resulting congestion. Eisenhower and Stevenson not looking much better. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford, no accidents or issues to report, but slightly higher than normal travel times on those Southside expressways. As we talked about a half hour ago, that the bridge on Lakeshore Drive northbound between Randolph and Grand is closed due to a structural emergency. That's the bridge over the river. Traffic is diverted off at the Randolph-Wacker exit. Traffic is allowed to use lower Lakeshore Drive to re-enter at Grand. The closure will last at least through tonight, but could be a lot longer, as the Chief and Brendan speculated.
Do you think they checked out lower Lakeshore Drive before they put everybody on that one?
That's a good question. As far as accidents are concerned, still have that significant crash out in the western suburbs, Hanover Park. That's Lake Street just west of I-290 at Ontarioville Road. That's a multi-vehicle crash that happened about an hour ago, and crews are still on the scene, so it must have been a significant one. Just south of there in Carroll Stream, County Farm Road at Schick, there is a crash. West of there in Streamwood, Munger Road at Brewster Creek Boulevard, there is a crash. Northern suburbs, looks like we have a couple of issues on Lake Cook Road, another one at Diamond Lake and Indian Creek Road, and then north of there, Route 137 at Waukegan Road, up in Waukegan, North Shore, there is a crash as well. Everything else looking okay out there, but we will continue to have a rain and sleet mix in the area, a high of 35. Right now it's overcast and 34 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, beautiful day down in the Valley of the Sun as pitchers and catchers report. Partly cloudy skies, high of 70. Right now it's clear and 37. In sports, the Bulls have now lost a franchise record 11 straight home games. They were beaten by the Bucks last night at the UC 112-99. Chris Dunn left with an injury. No details out on that this morning, so we'll keep an eye on that. Suns were off. Blackhawks and Coyotes were off as well. Hawks with a huge game tonight. They're in Boston to take on the Bruins. The Bruins are the 3 seed in the East, playing really good hockey. Blackhawks are 2 points out of a playoff spot in the West, looking for their 8th straight W. Chief.
We'll have to watch a little of that one. John, how are you?
Doing good. Good morning. How are you doing, guys?
Doing all right. Hey, Manny, I should know this. More my era than yours. Carl Malone, didn't spend 4 years in college, did he? Did he come out early? He must have.
He played at a really small school. I want to say, southeastern Louisiana or something like that. Some crazy. Let me look it up right now. Because I don't know. He was at such a small school. He had a very under the radar college career.
Really? Because he turned out to be are there too many power forwards better than him? There's probably a couple, but not very many.
He's widely considered a top 5 power forward of all time.
I would.
And he played at Louisiana Tech. And let me see how many years he played there. But he was the 13th overall pick.
Who would you rank up there in? In power forwards, probably got to put Kevin McHale.
I think the best power forward of all time is widely considered to be Tim Duncan.
I would agree with that.
And then, yes, Kevin McHale.
Well, but he would have never been times when he would have been a center.
Yeah, and that's the argument. Yeah. Is he really a center? But he technically is listed as a power forward, and he's widely considered as the best of all time. I think Malone is up there. I think Kevin McHale is up there. I think... if you consider Barkley a power forward, he would be up there. If I looked at a list, there's probably some guys we're missing. But there hasn't been as many great power forwards as you would think.
Well, because it used to be a huge enforcer position. It was a big, huge guy that was, Gus Johnson played next to Wilt. Gus Johnson was one of the first guys to tear down rims when he dunked.
Right.
There were some huge guys that played those positions.
By the way, Malone played 3 years at Louisiana Tech, and so he skipped,
all three. Wow.
Skipped his senior year.
Wow, I would. So he wasn't. So this guy will be. This guy's a one and done coming out of Duke.
Oh yeah, yeah. And Malone in today's game could have been a one and done. It just wasn't a thing you did back then. You might leave 1 year early, but you very rarely left 2 years early, and you certainly didn't leave 3 years early.
Yeah, but he wasn't way back in before my time when freshmen couldn't play.
Right.
That was
Yeah, Malone was drafted in 85, okay. So freshmen were playing.
Oh, yeah, freshmen, senior year was the first time they could play because Adrian Dantley was a freshman.
So that was mid-70s.
74.
So before that,
yeah,
your freshman was like the junior varsity.
Right.
Which is crazy. I wonder, why would you even have a rule like that, I wonder?
Because college is a pretty big deal for people, and you're supposed to be there to learn.
So it was sort of a year to get established academically, yeah, and get in the swing of things. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, it's you still had 3 years, which was a lot. Because matter of fact, when the freshman, that was the origination of the Sports Illustrated Jinx. There was a guy on the Irish, Steve Niehaus, who ended up being, I think, a number one pick of Seattle football. He was a guy. Matter of fact, I don't know what year it was. It might have been a little earlier than that, Manny. Might have been a little earlier than that because he was my sophomore year. Anyway, he came out as a he played as a freshman football. This is back.
He was the number 2 overall pick.
Yeah,
round 1, pick 2.
This is after he had a big knee injury, but he was a guy that came and he started as a freshman. They had some dude they were championing as an All-American tackle. And a couple of my friends had come from Indianapolis and all their buddies went to Purdue, right? So the Irish were playing Purdue, and I think the other guy's name was Greg Marks, and they were you know, they thought he was going to be an All-American. So after the game, we're in the dorm room, and the phone rings, and it's one of the guys off the Purdue team, like one of the guards, and he goes, Marks wasn't any good at all. Who's that freshman? That kid's unbelievable. We couldn't block him. He was two people. And he goes, and that was back when he reported for practice maybe 3 weeks before school started. You know, they didn't have the camps and all that stuff.
Right.
They weren't there
now,
all summer.
Now it's year-round.
Yeah, so basically the kid shows up in August, and he's a star like 3 weeks later. He was that good. And he's this big, bulky guy, but when you saw him walk, he was like a ballet guy. I mean, he was so light on his feet, it was scary. He was like Alex Karras.
I really wonder, though, back to your original point, how, like, for example, if you're UCLA and you have Lou Alcindor, how does he not play as a freshman? That's got to be the craziest thing as a coach. You're watching this kid. He's killing everyone in practice, I'm sure.
Well, I bet they were beating the varsity.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I bet they were killing the varsity.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so he went from getting his Sports Illustrated pictures as a freshman in the game. The next drill is when he hurt his knee. Niehaus. That was the one of the originators of the Sports Illustrated jinx. If you got on the cover of Sports Illustrated, he immediately got hurt. So he missed whatever it was, the rest of his freshman year.
Niehaus only played 4 years in the NFL.
Yeah, I
wonder if it was because of injuries.
Well, let's put it this way. You didn't want to get your knee fixed in 1973.
No. And he was the first ever draft choice of the new Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah.
So you were dead on.
They used to... And Jan, I don't know if you remember, there was no such thing as arthroscopy. They would open your knee up for like any of the surgeries, and they would like take the cartilage out.
Right.
I mean, what are you doing? What is that going to feel like 10 years later, for God's sake? That's why all those guys have fake knees. Butkus has to have two, I'm guessing. He's got at least one. Well, anyway, Jan, what do you make of, We knew we were going to get. Well, in fact, I predicted we'd be up 20 if there was a deal, and we're up exactly 20. It's not like they called me and told me about it, and I was able to buy any. But But now what? Now we got deal number two on the docket. Are we going to cut something with China? Well, yesterday we were doubling their tariffs on March 1st, and now we're meeting. So I mean, that changed in 12 hours yet again. I mean, it's What are you doing to trade this? I mean, I'm just making sure people are protected, and I almost don't care. I mean,
right. I mean, it's a combination of just doing our normal protected index kind of things, protecting folks in other ways. Those who need the income, furthering the income, keeping generating those ideas, and even within those type of things, there's sectors rotate, in and out of, or, like yesterday I had something peaking that looked like in the fixed income side, and then, I traded it out for something else, I thought it, reached as far as it's going to go. So just little things like that, Tom.
What do you find, Jan? I mean, to be perfectly honest, everybody, Jan's better at this than me. He and Dan do a lot more of this work than I do. What do you find in, without going out too far, say somebody wants to go out 2 years, year and a half, two and a half, something like that, and something reasonably safe, how's that for a word? Words. What are you, Dan, finding? What are you getting people? Can you get three, or are you locked in at like two and a half?
Well, a lot of times this is where I'll, use a fund too, but, you can push about three, because everything that was the other good, it's a good point that you brought up, Tom, is I'm doing everything in, especially the bond end of the fixed income side of what they call short term, 1 to 3 years. So,
are you buying?
Yeah, I mean, you could find it like that without, getting, something that's got a ridiculous credit rating.
Well, for a while, I know you guys were, zeroing in, even though it was like a 30-year band. You guys were zeroing in like the last 2.5 years of the thing. Because didn't we do some Ford stuff for a while? You guys, and this is a while ago, but we're essentially were taking, you could go out and buy a 20-year bond with only 2 years left, and to you it's only 2 years, then it's gonna get redeemed.
Right.
And sometimes, you can get, sometimes you get one of those, not at like 6% or anything, but you can get them, a couple of tenths higher than maybe one going out for 2 years because we found it and nobody else did. You know, once in a while we get one. Once in a while. I mean, are we still finding some of those maybe?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. You know, I'm still finding, you know, some good bargains, you know, along those. That's what I'll call that, a good bargain, you know, along those lines. There's no question there, you know, for the, you know, either high yield or investment grade bonds. It's mainly more along the lines of the investment grade. There's such a,
oh, sure, yeah.
They're so close. So that's another area that is pretty well stayed out of is the high yield. So or junk bonds.
I mean, the amount of effort it takes, like Jan and my brother, and I mean, if we have some clients that want some of this kind of stuff, I mean, if you can, you know, find, let's say, 2.5% easy. To find, you know, 2.75 at the same risk area, it's going to take you a while. I mean, you would think it would be easy. It's not. You're hustling. And RBC is actually pretty good at finding that stuff. One of our two clearing firms, we clear RBC and IB. They're pretty good at helping out. And then once in a while they'll send us an email saying they have X number available of a, God knows what, General Motor, you know, some bond that expires, you know, maybe a year from now, even though it was a 20-year bond coming out. You can get in and you can, you know, you pick up an extra 10, 15 basis points. I mean, you're not killing them, but it's a little something, you know, that you work for your clients for. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, you don't even know if the client even knows you did it for them, but you know you did, you know, type of thing.
Well, you're absolutely correct. And, yeah, this is one of the things that they, you know, shine on, you know, have, many, many individuals working in that department too for us.
Yeah. I mean, cause that's, I mean, it's really tough for a, as a small firm, you're not going to be in the middle of the bond world. I mean, because there's zillions of these bonds out there. I mean, you need to have that, but then you need, well, that's why you have a clearing firm where they will say, you know, some are better than others, obviously, but RBC does a lot of bonds. And they're pretty
well,
good
at
that.
Yeah, they do a decent filter for us and then bring it to us, Dan, myself, and others, and we look at it and, whittle it down even further, you know.
Yeah, I mean, left to our own devices, we're never going to know about somebody trying to sell a 20-year Ford bond with 2 years left. I mean, you have to, you know, that's a business unto itself. I mean, it's, but as long as we can get involved, it's okay. I mean, it's tell people what you're looking for, and lo and behold, somebody comes up with it. You know.
Well, that's exactly it.
I've been putting some people in the protected program in the, the QQQ and the XLE. Now this morning the oil's up a buck, so the XLE is up 77 cents. And I started buying these QQQs like 3 weeks ago, John. 161 and change. Now they're 169.73. I put some money to work the other day. The guys I did the first ones for, they think I'm Harry Houdini because, I mean, what a great trade. But the my question is, if I keep the PUDs snug and keep the calls a little snugger, do I still want in here? I'm thinking maybe yes. But I think you got to maybe, you know, but it's, I don't know that it's going to be 177 next week. You know, I think the easy money's been made in here, I guess is my point. But I don't, I'm not afraid of it here. Because the PUDs are down in price a little bit. But I wish I was still buying them at 161, I guess is what I'm moaning about. But what do you like better? Do you like any other indices better?
I like both of those. I like any better. I think those are a good place to be. You know, I mean, we started to finally see, you know, for a while, some decent movement on our precious metals, and now that seems to be taking a pause, so I don't know that I would put new money exactly today in those. You know,
well, what do you make of
some of the spiders and things like that, though? You know,
what do you make of the gold, despite the dollar going up a few days in a row, actually held 1,300. Now it's moving back up again. Are we going to see 1,400 in our future, or is this the top, like you say, and, you know, just roll up our puts and start selling calls and be happy?
No, I think it's just the you know, short-term pause is what we've seen just in the you know, last few days. You know how long that'll, you know, keep up is, you know, anybody's guess, up a little bit today. But no, I think we're going to keep meandering up. I just don't know that, You know, I still have quite a few positions there. And,
me too.
Just a little cautious as far as using new money, if you follow me, is what I'm saying.
Well, what's,
I'm not ready to get out of the ones I currently have.
What do you make of, is this a short-term situation? Because one thing you have to watch out for, because what Jan and I are involved in, we and a lot of our clients are, obviously, as well, is one thing nice about being in the XLE versus, well, first of all, there's no decent ETF on oil itself, so do not use the USO, do not under any circumstances use the USO. Talk about a wounded product, but somehow or another it's still out there for people to lose money in. But if you're in the XLE, last time oil was this high, John, I'm thinking the XLE was about $4 higher. Same way with the GDX. The GDX is the gold miners. Now, they both pay a dividend. The XLE pays a real nice dividend. But the GDX, I'm going to say last time the GLD was over 124, the GDX was, what, 24 and a half? So all these...
Yeah, they're separate.
They're all lagging a little. Now, if they catch up, you know, you and I are going to look like heroes. But is there some reason why these things are both lagging a little? I'm not sure why, to be honest with you. I mean, I think the XLE could be, you know, if oil stays here, maybe people think it's a short-term rise in oil here, but if oil stays here, I could see XLE going up $2-3 with oil staying right here. It would make sense, and it's been there before. That doesn't mean it's going to happen.
I think we lost John.
We did. Okay. What do you think,
Manny? Hopefully he calls back.
What do you think about oil?
I don't think anything about oil.
Well, you know, you're buying gas down in the city gas station, so every time you go in there, you have to feel like you've been robbed.
Essentially, yes. And I go to the cheapest place on the north side, which is on Damon and Diversey, and they got a little station there where it's always 15 to 20 cents cheaper than anywhere else on the north side, but it's still expensive.
Isn't the Costco cheaper? They're always mobbed in there.
The Costco is probably comparable, but I don't have a Costco card, so
why not?
That's not applicable. I don't know. I've thought about getting one. I assume there's an annual fee to it, and that's probably why
I
don't do it.
You could pile into ours.
Well, I could do that, but I don't even know what that entails. Do I have to, like, lie and cheat and have a fake ID, or
no,
how does that work?
No, we could figure it out. No, you'd have your own ID. We don't picture it.
And so what would I have to pay?
It's like $30.
And what am I going to save over the course of the year? $30?
Well, only if you, it depends on how you use it. If you go get gas every week, probably a reasonable amount. Anyway, so John, you're back. Where did you go?
I don't know. Out in ether world, I guess. I don't know.
All right. Well, so I mean, these things are. I'm a little cautious here because yesterday we were talking to David, and you know, when we have this, the border thing, I think is going to end soon. There's going to be some kind of a compromise there, and you know, who the hell even knows why they were fighting? But the Chinese thing, I think, has a ways to go, only because I don't think they're going to get them to admit they did stuff bad in the past. But say that's over 2 months from now, then what? Market too high or too low or the right number?
Well, you know, they just keep you know, elevating this or manufacturing something to keep pushing this up. You know, so. Would it be a fair value if it kept going up? I would say it would be a fair value or overvalued, to be perfectly honest with you. They keep finding ways to keep propping this up, forcing it up. I'll put it to you that way, Tom.
Yeah, I think, and I wonder what I don't know if I mentioned to you last week, but the amount of money being poured into the system by the Fed all of a sudden. I've never seen a turnaround like that in my. Well, I'm going to say I've been watching the Fed since I was in grad school. I've never seen anything like that. Even where they were heading one way, they were tightening, they were saying it was the right thing to do, and the guy got beat up seriously and turned around and said, you know what, we're just going back the other way. And, I mean, to go from 3.5% up to 6 at a time when we're allegedly having a good economy, I'm not sure I buy that, but allegedly having a good economy, is interesting to me. So I'm really reluctant to play anything on the short side here, at least for a little while. I think the surprises are going to continue to be to the upside. And I think
I would agree with you with predominantly protected positions, just like we talked about earlier, some fixed income,
You know, I trade a few stocks here and there for people, but I keep a real tight rein on them. I'll put it that way.
Well, I'm thinking on the upside.
2 years ago. Yeah.
I'm thinking on the upside to do some of these very, very bullish repair strategies, even maybe paying for them a little bit. Or if it goes up, we can maybe double up a little bit on some of this stuff and more than pay for the puts.
No, absolutely.
Because I think there's a chance we have a happy rally here. I mean, of course we could go the other way if all of a sudden the Chinese thing goes a little crazier. But some reason we're not at all concerned about debt levels. I mean, in any spot.
What did you think about Kenny's comment earlier that the market rally, if you will, has nothing to do with the government shutdown avoidance, and it's still all about China?
I think he's absolutely right. I mean, the DAX is not up 1% today based on our border wall, I don't think.
And yet it seems to be sort of the narrative this morning.
They're both there. How do you pull them out? It was a bullish comment on...
Well, his point, which I think is well taken, is why the hell would all these other countries who are rallying this morning care about our border security?
They don't.
Exactly. So it's probably a much smaller percentage.
It was bigger news 2 weeks ago when we were shut down, and it was starting to cost a lot of money.
Sure.
Well, they care. They care about that our futures are up. Is what they care about.
Yeah, but I mean, the big move was in the Nikkei. Why it was down so much, and it was up, over almost 3% today. So
Right. Obviously,
those guys are feeling the love and something.
Right.
But I mean, these tariff things got to be helping. What are we going to do with our? We're over $60 billion now. We've collected in tariffs. And we got people dumb enough to think the Japanese or the Chinese are paying for it. Only because their president's telling them they are. I mean, if you go to debtclack.org, John, they now have a new spot there for tariffs collected so far, which they didn't have. We're up to 50. Oh, look here, we got 2 minutes. I can look and see. So, what are you going out to see pitchers and catchers today, or what are you doing?
Well, not today, but I think this weekend is great, just right up the road for me. Not even a mile and a half. That's where the Padres play. So, and the Mariners.
All right. So if you go out there on Saturday before the schedule actually starts, what do you go out? So you just bunch of inter squad games where we playing each other?
Yeah. A lot of times I'll go up there and. They got like these practice fields, and I just kind of walk around the practice fields and just watch a little bit.
I used to do that at Cubs down the block was the Holcomb Park and down to was it Fitch Field? I get on there.
Yeah,
and watch,
I think it was.
Yeah, I watch all the guys. The choreography. If you've never seen a full baseball practice with a lot of people, where there's a guy pitching, there's a guy hitting, they got that batting cage, and to the left of the batter there's a guy hitting infield. And to the right of the batter is the guy hitting outfield, plus the batter's hitting. So there's stuff happening. There's stuff for like 20 people out there to
do. I love the sound of it, too.
Yeah.
The wood bat and how it kind of echoes. It's the best.
Plus, there's three of them cracking at the same time, pretty much.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, we're up to $59.5 billion in tariff tax revenue. If you go to debtclock.org, isn't that special, Jen? Anyway, S&P futures up 18 now. Dow futures up 50 and a quarter. NASDAQ futures up 50 and a quarter. We got the Dow futures up like 190. Should have an update today. We'll tell you all about it tomorrow morning. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.